This is the fifth broadcast on Bible economics, God's laws and precepts on money, economics, and trade, as given in the Holy Word. I do pray most of you have heard the first parts of this series, but if not, stay with me anyway, for I can assure you God's divine law will one day become the law of this great Christian republic. Last week I spent most of the broadcast on that crazy metal called gold. The prophet Ezekiel, in the 7th chapter, writes of the time before the kingdom, and he says, in verse 19, "They shall cast their silver in the streets, and their gold shall be removed. Their silver and their gold shall not be able to deliver them in the day of the wrath of the Lord. They shall not satisfy their souls, neither fill their bowels." Gold and silver will become so worthless men will throw it away. They will not be able to buy food with it to fill their bowels. Personally, I would guess that events which point to a worldwide famine will make food a most precious commodity, at least for a while. And when a man needs his food to survive, he of course will not sell it to another for gold, for one cannot eat gold. If you have ever read Josephus' account of the destruction of Jerusalem, in 70 A.D. by the Roman armies under Titus, you know inside the city they found tens of thousands of people starving to death with their gold lying around them. Isaiah also prophesies the same thing we read in Ezekiel, but he adds something else, which also seems to be coming to pass. Isaiah 2 verse 12 gives us the time when this is to happen, the day of the Lord of hosts. Then we read this in verse 19 to 21. "And they shall go into the holes of the rocks, and into the caves of the earth, for fear of the Lord, and for the glory of his majesty, when he ariseth to shake terribly the earth. In that day a man shall cast his idols of silver, and his idols of gold, which they made each one for himself to worship, to the moles and to the bats, to go into the clefts of the rocks and into the tops of the ragged rocks, for fear of the Lord and for the glory of his majesty, when he ariseth to shake terribly the earth." In the New Testament, Jesus spoke of this time when the earth and the heavens would be shaken, and Paul wrote of it in his letter to the Israelites, Hebrews 12, verse 25. He is, of course, writing about Jesus Christ. "See that ye refuse not him that speaketh, for if they escape not who refused him that spake on earth, much more shall not we escape, if we turn away from him that speaketh from heaven, whose voice then shook the earth." And here he is referring to God's audible voice to Israel at Mount Sinai, when it shook the whole mountain. "Whose voice then shook the earth, but now he hath promised, saying, yet once more, I shake not the earth only, but also heaven. And this word, yet once more, signifieth that removing of those things that may be shaken, as of things that are made, that those things which cannot be shaken may remain." Verse 28. "Wherefore we, receiving a kingdom that cannot be moved, let us have grace whereby we may serve God acceptably, with reverence and godly fear, for our God is a consuming fire." So the kingdom of Jesus Christ will be all that remains when this shaking is over. And I believe the same shaking prophesied in Isaiah 2, the shaking that will make gold and silver worthless in the earth, is the shaking prophesied in Hebrews 12. This shaking is also to happen during the invasion by Gog and Magog and all their bands into the nations of Israel, as prophesied in Ezekiel 38 and 39. Most students of prophecy recognize this Antichrist force here in Ezekiel 38 as world communism under Russia. And God, speaking of its destruction, in verse 19, "Surely in that day there shall be a great shaking in the land of Israel." And in verse 20, "All the men that are upon the face of the earth shall shake at my presence, and the mountains shall be thrown down, and the steep places shall fall, and every wall shall fall to the ground. Now, before we leave the subject of gold and silver and its worthlessness in the day of God's shaking of the earth, turn back again to Isaiah 2 and notice something else we read there. Verse 19, they shall go into the holes of the rocks and into the caves of the earth. And verse 21, they shall go into the clefts of the rocks and into the tops of the ragged rocks. I think it is significant and prophecy fulfilled that the rulers of the earth are now digging into the earth and into the rocks for protection. The American Legion magazine about a year ago reported on Red China that the major cities are digging deep into the earth to store food and survival supplies because they expect a nuclear war in the near future. Intelligence from the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe reveals the Rebs are digging massive bunkers and nuclear shelters under Moscow and other major cities. Miles of tunnels are being constructed under Moscow to connect with the subway for food and water storage and for survival headquarters for the Red government. Even in America, almost unknown to the citizens, huge bunkers are being built inside mountains near Washington, D.C. and in scores of other places around the United States. Some of the largest banks are storing microfilms of all of their papers and mortgages in caves in the rocks, supposedly so they can come out after the nuclear war and take your property if you or the survivors of your family cannot make the payments. I covered much of this some months ago, so won't repeat it all now, but the rulers are constructing survival shelters for themselves, while they promise the people détente and peace. Anyway, I think they are fulfilling exactly what God Almighty said they would do, go into the holes of the rocks and into the caves of the earth. Some men have done this in the past, but this is the first time we have found it carried out as a major policy of the world's most powerful rulers. At the present time, they are burying their gold and silver also, but God says it will be worthless anyway. Now that is enough on gold. I said last week we would talk about what God has to say about stable money, money that does not fluctuate in value, and we will in a few minutes after I offer our new free literature for the month of March. First, my address, America's Promise, Box 5334, Phoenix, Arizona, 85010. Ask for the free March packet of literature. We have a study on God's law prepared by Dr. J. Franklin Snook of Oregon titled, America Needs the Divine Law. Dr. Snook explains the difference between the law and the rituals of the Israel religion, shows God's law was to be administered by government, and then gives examples of what would happen in America if we began following the law of God. It would take a large book to cover it all, of course, but in this tract he covers enough to prove at least two things. Number one, ministers are in error when they do not teach the law. And number two, God's law can correct the evils in America quickly and simply. Then he discusses the divine law briefly on the following subjects: race, capitalism, taxes, monopolies and trusts, farming, criminal law, God's law for the military, physical health, and foreign policy and war. Every one of you should write and get a copy of it, read it, and insist your minister read it also. Most Christians do not even know God's law covers those subjects. All right, back to God's laws on economics, on the subject of stable money. First, the general law, and then we'll read some of the specific statutes. The law was given at Mount Sinai, Exodus 20, verse 15, the eighth commandment, thou shalt not steal. And verse 17, the 10th commandment, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, and so on. These, of course, are the basic laws establishing the just right of property ownership. And the divine precept that taking property from another person is stealing and covetousness. Then some specific instructions were given at the same time. Exodus 21 covers such diverse areas as a man causing injury to another is to pay for his healing and time lost from work. A man causing a miscarriage is to pay the husband damages. Persons responsible for leaving pits uncovered or wild animals loose are to pay damages for people injured and so on. Chapter 22 covers thieves who are to restore from double to five times the amount they stole, man's responsibility when he takes care of another person's property. Verse 20 and 22 orders the strangers, widows or fatherless children, are not to be afflicted or oppressed. Verse 25, interest is not to be charged on money. As we have seen, that is a form of stealing, and so on. And let's face it, many crimes are a form of stealing. Killing is stealing a man's life, or a woman's husband, or a child's father. Raping is stealing a woman's virginity and her honor. Bearing false witness or talebearing steals a man's reputation or results in other loss to him. Covetousness often leads to stealing and on and on. Purchasing power of money is a very effective method of stealing, without the thief having to risk using a gun to do it. One simple example of how inflation steals is that it has moved many people into higher income tax brackets. They have not gained purchasing power, but the government now takes a larger percentage of their earnings, stealing it, as it were, by deceit and fraud. And we'll discuss more of that later. But anyway, at Mount Sinai, God gave the general law against theft, then statutes to implement the law, and he gave more. Turn with me to Leviticus 19, where we find God commanded Israel to have exact measurements for merchandise. Verse 35, ye shall do no unrighteousness in judgment, in meat yard, in weight, or in measure. Just balances, just weights, a just ephah and a just hin, and those were both grain and liquid measurements. A just hin shall ye have. I am the Lord your God, which brought you out of the land of Egypt. Therefore shall ye observe all my statutes and all my judgments and do them. I am the Lord. And that obviously includes these statutes commanding just and exact measurements. God is not a fool, as men are. God knew it was not enough just to tell a man not to steal. God told man how to establish standards of measurement in the nation so that stealing could be prevented. Turn to Deuteronomy 25, verse 13. Thou shalt not have in thine house diverse or different measures, a great and a small, but thou shalt have a perfect and a just weight, a perfect and just measure shalt thou have. And listen to the rest of that verse. That thy days may be lengthened in the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. God says, your longevity in the land shall be increased if you have specific, exact measures for the products traded in Israel. And the next verse says, for all that do such things, and all that do unrighteously, are an abomination unto the Lord thy God, meaning that all who falsify measurements, or who use different scales, or grades, or quantities to deceive, were doing unrighteousness, and were an abomination unto God. Proverbs 11, verse 1. A false balance is abomination to the Lord, but a just weight is his delight. Proverbs 20:23. Diverse or different, diverse weights are an abomination unto the Lord, and a false balance is not good. Today, we do understand how merchants could steal if they were allowed to change the size of the bushel, or the gallon, or the pound. You can see that. Suppose you went to a grocery store today and purchased a box of cereal labeled 1 pound. But when you weighed it at home, your scale showed it weighed 12 ounces. Imagine your consternation if you returned to the store and the manager informed you, "Oh, you have no complaint. We have changed our pound to 12 ounces. You got what you paid for. Go on home." Then suppose this could happen all over the nation. Every merchant or producer could establish whatever weight he wanted and call it a pound, or put however many inches he wanted in a yard, and sold you yard goods, and you got 12 inches of cloth for what you thought was a yard. Or put it in a larger context. How about the steel manufacturer who purchased 100,000 tons of ore only to have it delivered and find the iron mine had changed their ton to 500 pounds instead of 2,000? And how about not changing the measurement itself, but just falsifying it? What if the service stations could set their pumps to register more gallons than you received, or the butcher or the feed store set their scales to read whatever they wanted? It is easy to see that trade and commerce could not function. Exact measurements, measurements known and understood by all parties, are an absolute necessity for civilized society. So much of the Mount Sinai covenant of the law has to do with property and economic justice. Some think God gave only the Ten Commandments at Mount Sinai, but God not only told men not to steal, He also gave them statutes and judgments so they could set up a civilization where their labor, their property, and their lives were protected, and they could live and work not only without stealing, but without allowing other men to steal from them. So civilized men long ago set exact measurements for the gram, ounce, pound, inch, foot, mile, gallon, and bushel. We even set grades or standards of purity. Milk must have so much butterfat. 10-penny nails are all the same length. Batteries give specific voltage. Metals are graded by alloy, fineness, hardness, size, and so on. All of these set by law for the good of the people and to establish honesty and stability in trade and commerce. But this is not true of money. This is not true of money. Money, the one thing that measures all others, has its value, its purchasing power, controlled by a privately owned corporation called the Federal Reserve. The government has no control over the value of money. The Federal Reserve Corporation is owned by bankers, by those who make their fortunes in money and credit, and they set the rules and the measurements. They establish or change interest rates, terms of mortgages, and control the actual amount of money or credit available to the nation and to the government. God commanded a just weight and a just measure, one that would not and could not be used for stealing. But bankers can reduce the amount of money and credit in circulation and foreclose on 10,000 farms. They can raise interest rates and bankrupt 10,000 businesses in a year and take their property. They can withhold billions of dollars in loans to large corporations, as they did in 1929 and 1930, and put a million husbands and fathers out of work in 30 days. And all of this without so much as a "by your leave" from President, Congress, or any other level of government. Their fluctuation of the value of money makes it an unjust balance and a diverse weight, a fluctuating measurement which robs the producer and enriches the moneylender. It is a simple and yet terrifying method of stealing not hundreds of dollars, but billions of dollars from the working people of America. God said through the prophet Amos, "They make the ephah small and the shekel great, and falsify the balances by deceit, that they may buy the poor for silver and the needy for a pair of shoes." At no time during World War II, the Korean War, the Vietnam War, or when America gives billions of dollars worth of military equipment to foreign governments, did the bankers who run the Fed tell the government they didn't have enough money to lend and spend. But in peacetime, the chairman of the Fed goes before Congress, protests the spending of too much money inside America for projects for the American people, and a few days later, the president cancels funds for dam and water conservation projects in 15 of the United States. Why is there always money for war, or for foreign nations, or for busing children, or for toxic vaccinations, or for nonsense, but for constructive projects to benefit the American people in the future, there is no money? Last week, I read a UPI report and an Associated Press report. Both stated that the chairman of the Federal Reserve controlled all money policies, and neither the Congress nor the president had anything to say about it. President James Garfield said, quote, "Whoever controls the volume of money in any country is absolute master of all industry and commerce," end of quote. Where did that cancellation order for those dams in 15 states come from? Did it come from the president, or did it come from the bankers who control the amount of money and credit available to the United States? Next week, God willing, we will get into the books of the prophets on this subject of Bible economics and prophecy, and show the difference between man's current wicked system and God's future righteous one. Ministers seem not to preach the precepts of the law to any extent, and our people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. George Washington's vision, a vision he had at Valley Forge in the winter of 1777, at a time when the colonial armies were almost despairing of winning independence. Most of what he saw in that vision has already come to pass, and if you have never read it before, you should read it. You will be amazed at how it fits the last 200 years and today. Until next week when I return, God willing, this is Pastor Emery saying goodbye. God bless you, read your Bible, and pray for Christian America.